accession number 9875, reel 21.
Mr. Ashurst, reel 21. You were telling me about how you were just about to cross the bridge at Newport under heavy bombardment. If you could tell me what happened. You were waiting for a gap, or after a salvo had landed.
Yes, the moment one salvo landed, we're off. Four or five of us. Lightning over that bridge. And down at the other side, we could get behind the bank, the canal bank, for safety, do you see? And, well, for some sort of safety. And we went along the bank. Anyway, I lost two men somewhere, I don't know, coming across the bridge or something. Two of my lads was missing. And I went down this canal bank, right to where we crossed the swamp.
This is to get to the front line?
Yes. But when we get there, I'm looking over the bank, and so is the lads, at this swamp right in the open, then a communication trench at the top end of it. We're looking across this swamp, and all the duck boards are splattered all over the place. Should have been duck boards going across. And we can see shells dropping here and there in it, and bullets battering in it, you know. So one of the lads said, "We're not going that way, sir. We'll never get there. We'd all be done in." I said, "Yes, I think you're right, too." I said, "Anyway, we're not going that way. That fellow told us to go that way. Come and take us." So I took him further along the canal bank until I come to a communication trench leading off it. And I knew that would get me to the front line some way. So we went along the bank and got to a place where there was a communication train. We entered that and we got right round to where our front line should be, you know, to our own front line. Gone right round because it took us longer, and we settled down there in the little pillboxes with a sentry, just one sentry on the lookout, you know, see Jerry was coming. Anyway, he kept up the bombardment. Shells were dropping here and there. They were dropping against the little dugout. And one dropped right on top of it. Nearly knocked all our brains out. But it didn't get through, you know. No, it didn't damage it, get through.
What was the effect of a shell hitting? What did you say it nearly knocked it? What did it feel like inside the...
Oh, hell of a thump in your head when it dropped on the roof.
This is a pillbox, don't you?
Yes. They've only a square hole to go in, you know. And if one dropped close, fitted close outside to the hole, it would blow all your pants inside. As you were inside, it would blow all your pants and things like that. The draft, you know, you'd feel it blow all your things. The draft coming through you, in and out. Anyway, it didn't hurt us, so he never came. Fritz never came. And after 18 hours, he stopped. He never attempted to come forward at all. But after 18 solid hours, and by God, he sent some stuff over. He dislocated our reserves. He knocked gun positions out and guns. He battered everything there was to batter. And we were supposed to be preparing to go over the top, you know, with the assistance of the Navy firing from the sea. Anyway, that dropped out then. We weren't fit. We weren't fit to fight in any shape or form, never mind go over the top. He battered us that much in 18 hours. 18 hours without stopping, he battered us. So at the finish, we got relieved and out we came. You know, and we went to some tents. We billeted in some tents, right behind the line. Anyway, we was right up again a big 12-inch gun emplacement that ran on a train, you know, one of them. Ran on a big wagon, you know. And we were right again that when we camped. We used to watch them fire it, you know, and hold our ears. And they used to go down the dugout and fire it, where you used to hold our ears. And it was firing 12 miles, I believe, that big gun. 12 miles. And they reckoned, they were firing to the hotel, and they reckoned one day they did it. They were called celebrating, they did it, the gunners, this big hotel 12 miles away. And so we got a drink with them, like. And anyway.
Did it have a name, that gun? Because some of them had names.
No, no.
To you, it was just 12-inch railway gun.
No, I didn't know of any name. But it was a 12-inch gun. And they say it fired 12 miles. And I think the shell went 12 miles out to go there. Surprising, isn't it? Yes. And anyway, we got relieved. We came out and got in these tents beside this big gun. And we were resting there the morning after when the commanding officer, it was my platoon officer. He got done, the commanding officer, and my platoon officer had taken the job over. And he sent for me across the field, you know, to the tent. He wanted to see me, so I went across. And when I got there, he says, by the way, Sergeant, I believe you didn't go to the front line the way you were told to do. I said, no, sir, I didn't. I said, there'd have been none of us here to tell the tale if I had it. And he said, nevertheless, you didn't go the way you were ordered to. That amounts to cowardice, he says, you know. So I says, cowardice, I said, all right, wait till I get back and I'll tell the men what you say. I said, and another thing, you take me to the colonel, you'll regret it, because we'll tell him some tales about you. Oh, I said, yes. We'll tell him how many times we've gone on patrol at night and supped your whiskey out of your flask while we've been doing it. You know, we had, you know, above once. And I said, you go to the colonel and tell him. So when I went back, I told the lads, they said, come on, let's go to the colonel. No, I said, no, man, we'll not go. See what he does first. Anyway, he did nothing no more. He did nothing no more after he told us that. He was afraid, I think, of going, in case we told him too many tales, the colonel, about him.
Was this the same officer that had given you the hard time at Ypres? The one who wanted to send you up twice?
Yes, yes, yes. Same fella. So,
Did you tell any of your troops, of your section, did you tell them what had happened?
Yes, I told them every word he said.
What did they say?
Come on, let's go to the colonel, they said. Come on, let's go to the colonel, Sergeant. Tell him our tale first. I said, no, we'll wait and see what he does. But he never went to the colonel, of course. So there was nothing no more happened about it. But we moved from there after that. We moved to some other place, miles away. Oh, it was a hell of a journey. And he went down the line. He was sick, a toothache or something. He went down the line sick, this officer, you know. So we arrived at this other place without him. And it was a place where the French were catching it a bit hard. You know, they were having a rough do. And we went down to help them.
Whereabouts to exactly?
No, that's where it is. I thought it was right down south. Must have been, to help the French, you see. It was right down there somewhere. Anyway, we helped them. They lost a piece, some land. We went in, and they caught it hot too. They lost some men. We went in and got the land back for them. And then we were relieved, and we came out and lodged in a field just behind the line, in tents or bivouacs or anything, whatever we had, you know. And one morning, while we were lying there, Fritz kept coming over with a plane, trying to mean machine gunners, you know. We could hear his bullets hitting the ground round about us. We were sticking our legs out like this, so he'd hit them. Anyway, he didn't. And this particular morning, the adjutant sent for me, and he said, the messenger said, the adjutant wants you straight away. Oh, Lord, I thought, what the hell are we going in for next, you know? So when I got there to the tent, he says, good morning, Sergeant. I said, good morning, sir. And he put his hand out to shake hands. You're a damn lucky fellow, he says. Shake hands, he says. You're a damn lucky fellow. I said, oh, sir. He said, yes. He says, you're going home on for a commission. I said, never, sir. He said, yes. I said, when am I going? He said, you're going now. Now. Straight away. Well, I thought, right from the battle line, you know, right away to Blighty. Bloody hell. And I walked back to the lads, and the lads were saying, you lucky buggers, you know, and all that. And the war might finish while you're over there, which it did, too. So I packed my things up, made my way to the quartermaster's.
How did you feel about it? Because...
Oh, absolutely delighted. I felt free and, you know, fine, I felt, absolutely. I couldn't feel no different.
Were you sorry to be leaving your section?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes. I was sorry to leave the lads, seeing that they weren't coming, you know, with me. I told the Major. I said, well, I wish you was coming with me, sir. Oh, well, he said, go on, get your things and get off. Don't waste any time. He said, have you got any money? I said, no, sir. He gave me a 20-franc note. There you are. He says, that'll help you along a bit to London. I said, thank you, sir. And off I went.
Did you have any qualms about you that you were going to be a ranker officer, in the sense you didn't have a privileged background? Did you think you could cope with the social and money side of it?
Well, when I saw the general, he told me I hadn't to think about such things. He said, whatever you want, the British government will give you. That's what I told him. I had no money, you know, or anything like that. We don't want men with money, he said. We want men of experience, like you. You see. So that settled it.
What else did... You had an interview with the general. What else did he ask you? Were you given an examination or testing?
Oh, yes. He asked me when I first joined up. I told him, before the war, like, you know, where I got my first stripe. where I got my second stripe and where I got my third stripe, sergeant. He asked me all those. And when I said Colonel Maniac made me a copper, "Ah," he says, "a fine soldier." I said, "Yes, sir." And, well, he said, "I've been through one of these schools," he said, "in England. And you can take from me, they have a damn good time." That's what the general said, you know. I found out he was telling the truth, too. So I went, and of course I had to make my way to the quartermaster stores and get some new clothes and my rifle in, you know, bayonets, that sort of thing. And then I had to make to another place, another village, miles away again, and I had to get there whichever way I wanted. Anyway, I walked down that, from that field, I walked down that lane, it was quiet. Just an odd shell coming over now and again. And I walking down that lane, practically singing to myself. When I heard a plane, I thought, this fellow's not getting me, so I found a bit of cover, you know, in a ditch. And it was one of our own when it come over my head, it was one of our own.
You were more nervous now?
I didn't want to get anything happen now. So, of course, and then in a bit, while I was walking down that long lane, I heard a motor lorry coming in my direction, you know, going in my way. So I signalled to him to stop, and he did. "Jump up here, old fella." So he said, "Where are you going? Down the line? Are you sick? Are you going down the line sick?" I said, "No. I said, I'm going home for a commission. I'm going right away to Blighty." "Right away to bloody Blighty," he says, you know. "Yes," I said, "that's where I'm going." And I was chewing a biscuit. He said, "Is that all you've got to eat?" I said, "Yes, I've nothing else." He said, "Lift that seat up you sat on," he said, "you'll find some bread and cheese." So I did, and I had some bread and cheese with him. We rode about 7 or 8 miles with him before I had to leave him. He was going another direction, you know. Yeah, it was a good lift that was, with full pack and rifle. You see, I hadn't got rid of them yet. Because I got rid of them quartermaster stores and a good night's sleep and good feed. And then off again to another village. And each village I got to, I found out there was another man or two on the same game, you know. Till we're 20 when we got to London. We had 20 of us. And a guide met us at London. And he said, "All right, follow him." He took us to the war office or somewhere like that. And we all stood there, and then orderly come out of a room over there. And he said, "Sergeant Ashurst." That was me, first one, you know. I thought, well, with being A, that must have been it, you know. Anyway, I went in, saluted. "Good morning, Sergeant." "Good morning, sir." He says, "Now then, here you are. That's your ticket of leave for 14 days. And that's your money, £14. And that's a ticket to return to Ripon. When your leave is finished, you go on to Ripon, to the cadet school at Ripon."
Did it have a number or name, the cadet school, the officers' training camp?
No. I just knew it was at Ripon, that's all. Near Catterick, you know.
And roughly what date was this that you came back from France?
Well, it would have been about, what, August? August or September. Because I did just about 3 months there, and the war finished. So August, September, October, November. It was August or September when I marched down that lane. And of course we had a glorious time at the school. Oh, it was money for jam.
What was your accommodation like when you got there?
Oh, at the school, a nissing hut. It was a nissing hut with a three-plank bed, you know, and a what's name mattress on and blankets. Of course, and a bonnet stove in the middle. And I got the fella was a Yorkshire man, Scotchman, that I was next to in bed. And I said, I'll have to get some pyjamas, you know. He said, don't worry, pyjamas do you want? I said, yes, I'll have to get some. He said, don't worry, I'll get you a pair. His dad was in the business. And he sent him, actually, two pair of pyjamas and gave them to me. So that was a good start, wasn't it?
What were the other cadets or trainees like? What backgrounds did they
come from? There was all sorts of rough and intelligent men. And also, there was medals galore, you know, on the breast. DCM and MM, you know, there was medals galore.
What social background were they from?
There were nothing extra social background, I wouldn't say, most of them.
Were they mostly...
middle class, perhaps at most.
Had most of them been out there as sergeants?
Yes, yes. Everyone had been out.
So they weren't new, completely new officers?
No, no.
It was a training for NCOs?
Yes, because The biggest punishment you could have there for doing wrong was RTU, returned to unit. Well, you couldn't have nothing worse than that, could you? Going back to your battalion in the front line, eh? That was the worst punishment they could give anybody, wasn't it? And that's what you got, RTU, if you misbehaved yourself.
What sort of training did they give you then?
Nothing much, on the ordinary physical drill of an ordinary soldier. Drilling of, say, about 30 men.
Oh, you were drilling them? You were taking the drill?
Yes, you see.
Who were the men? Other cadets, or were they?
Yes, other cadets.
So you'd each take it in turns?
Each day, yes. Each one would try.
Did you have any difficulty in that sort of simple
None
drilling?
None at all, me. I had none whatever. I walked it. In what's the name course, you know, rifle course, you know, everything. I knew all about it. I learned it very well. I knew all about guns. I knew the length. I know to this day.
Did you get any training in the art of command or how to conduct yourself in front of the men so that they respect you?
No, you just drill them. You drill them, perhaps you try and drill a company, you know. Perhaps, say, about 60 or 70 of them. You drill them. And it was the way you drilled them, the way you used your voice and gave commands, you know. And the way you showed them how to use a rifle, how to shoot with it. It was just... as if you'd be going teaching a lot of recruits when you left. It was like that, you know.
So you found that at that level it was no different being an officer from being an NCO, in the sense it wasn't any more difficult?
Oh no, it was no more difficult, it was easier. And you had more privileges. The men, the soldiers at Catterick, not far off, the ordinary soldiers, they had to be in benign. We was allowed out till 11. And I could wear a civil raincoat when I was out. I could wear a civilian raincoat. They couldn't, soldiers, you know. But I could, yes. I could go out in a civilian raincoat, almost like a civvy.
Were you taught anything about tactics or, you know, how to conduct a small unit, a platoon, for instance, or company in the field?
No. I think they knew very well that you knew that lot. No. You just handle them in drill and so forth, you know.
What about military law? Did you have to learn any of that?
No, nothing much on it. I think they, most of them knew that. I mean, there was only one thing, you go, not to desert or, you know, a show of cowardice. Nothing like that. That's all you needed to know. Handle Mills's bomb, you know. Load it. Handle it.
So you found that the skills that they were trying to bring on in you as an officer were skills that you already had as an experienced NCO?
Yes.
So to you, were you tested at all in your skill in these skills? Did they examine you or test you?
Well, he may stand there for 5 minutes listening to you. Very good, Sergeant, and he'd bugger off. You know, this, they're all wounded officers, you know, that had that job. Yes, it all been out.
Did all the NCOs in your group progress as easily as you did? Did they all manage to keep up the standard?
Well, as far as I know, no, I don't think some of them was quite as good. They weren't as smart as me, some of them, because, like I say, I'd had a lot of experience in rifles and drill, you know. And I'd never forgotten it, you see, being an NCO too, all the time.
Now, did you get to the end of your course at Ripon before the Armistice Day arrived?
No. Yes. We were finished. And I understood that we got to go somewhere else. I thought it was down south. I don't know. But we were supposed to go somewhere else to have the finishing touch put on it or something.
And what would that finishing touch be?
Why, I think it was a bit socially, you know, like teaching you to be gentlemen, you know.
You hadn't had any of that then?
No. No.
But that was forestalled by the armistice.
Yes.
What do you remember about November the 11th?
Well, I remember on that particular morning the whistle started blowing and the bells started ringing and the men started dancing and shouting and the women were dancing and crying and laughing. You know, the wasps we had at the camp, the wax or whatever they were. They were laughing and dancing and singing. And I was like an outsider standing there. That's what I felt like. An outsider standing there. Because it didn't that much effect on me, the war finishing. It didn't even affect me, never mind anything else. I didn't say, is it over then, or anything. It simply did nothing to me because, as I say, the war was over for me when I walked down that French lane, saying right away to Blighty. That was the end of the war for me. And it was the end of the war for me, walking down that lane. Yes.
What happened after the armistice? You presumably didn't go south for this finishing touch.
No, but you see, it was this way. I could have been discharged pretty quick. You were discharging them pretty quick then when the war finished. But I had done 7 years. And if I could get to the 5th of January, that was
1919.
Yes. If I could hang on in there till the 5th of January, which wasn't long, you know, from the 11th of November, I could have another sum of money, a small sum, probably 14 or 15 quid, something like that, because they'd kept me a day over my time. If you did 7 years and they kept you a day every other time, there's so much money to pay you. Well, I saw the officer, you know, and I told him about this.
The officer at Ripon?
Yes. I said, if I can stay here, sir, until after the 5th, I said, it'll get me another 14 or 15 pounds. My word, you must have it. He said, oh, yes, 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 I'll find you something to do. And he never did. He never did. He just let me carry on.
What were you doing for those 2 months?
Well, some were filling papers in, you know, helping to fill discharge papers in. But I never did any. He never gave me any work to do.
You just lived in the Nissen hut and...
I just carried on, going out and coming in.
You weren't... Were you being trained anymore as an officer?
No, finished.
Was there ever any question of you carrying on to take a commission, or was that...
No, no. There was nobody mentioned that to me, or anything.
Did you regret that opportunity gone, that you weren't going to get your commission, or would you rather have got it?
Yes, really, I'd rather have got it. Of course, it would have made a difference in my gratuity of a good number of pounds, you know. Being discharged as a lieutenant instead of a sergeant, it would have been far more... money, you know. So...
Had you ever thought of staying on in the army?
No, I had that chance. I had...